Greetings, adventurers. Today we're excited to introduce you to a new story, Dark Dice, a horror podcast that blurs the line between actual play and audio drama, where the story is determined by the roll of the dice. Six adventurers embark on a journey into the ruinous domain of the Nameless God. They will never be the same again. One of the players is not what they seem after a doppelganger, a creature that can assume the form and voice of whatever it kills, infiltrates the team. As the players are picked off and replaced one at a time, can they figure out who the monster is before it's too late? Can you? Here's a quick example of what our show sounds like.
The shambler with the jar of liquid inside of him.
Soren Arkwright let loose an arrow that cracked the glass, passing through the spine of the creature. The shambler still managed to maintain its forward momentum, but stumbled as it eagerly tried to bite and swipe at Soren, landing near his feet.
As Jeff Goldblum has now joined our cast, Dark Dice is available however you listen to podcasts.
Gage Kepler checked his phone for the sixth time. No missed texts. He started to wonder if he'd been stood up. He clocked the waiter coming to check on him for what would be the third time. He had already drank half of the coffee pot he'd ordered for the table and now felt jittery and anxious. The waiter stopped at the booth behind Gage, checking on the only other customers, a quiet pair picking unhappily at their food. Gage hoped they would request something to keep the waiter busy for a while. The door jingled open. In walked a short, pretty, young woman in a puffy jacket and slim jeans. She searched back and forth, then, seeing Gage, straightened up, smiled, and sauntered over. "Lisa Duncan?" Gage asked as the woman slid into the booth. "I'm Gage." As she slipped off her coat, she shot him a playful smirk. "Oh, sure, Mr. Big Shot," she said. "Act like you don't think I know exactly who you are." The coffee started feeling sour in Gage's stomach. He had but one claim to fame, and it was a chapter of his life he feared he would forever be trying to close. He said, "Yeah, sorry, but I don't really like talking about all that stuff with the Whitney brothers." "I wondered about that," Lisa said. She slid her empty mug in front of herself and poured herself some coffee. "Whatever happened between you and the Whitneys anyway? I mean, you guys haven't made a video together and..." She looked up and put her free hand over her mouth. Gage laughed. "It's okay," he said. "Usually people pretend to care about the rest of my life before circling back to the Whitney stuff. At least you're honest." "I can't help it," Lisa said, downtrodden. "I swear that's not the reason I matched with you. Well, not the only reason." Gage felt an instant attraction to Lisa. She was 28, just like him, short, brunette, and she had an honest smile that made him trust her despite them just meeting. Where other girls' inquiries into his past had irritated him, Lisa's interest stoked his ego, and he couldn't blame her for being curious. He had been linked to the famous Whitney brothers for years, then suddenly stopped appearing in their videos. Since he and the brothers had mutually agreed never to share the footage from their last ghost hunt together, a hunt during which Darian Whitney and Gage himself were possessed by spirits, no one in the public knew why they had parted ways. "Hi, miss, can I start you with something to drink?" the waiter asked, appearing from nowhere. Lisa said, I'm okay with just the coffee for now, but could I get a water?" The waiter nodded and disappeared. Gage studied Lisa as she sipped from her steaming mug. She looked so anxious, and he could settle her nerves so easily. All he had to do was ask, "What do you want to know about it, me and the Whitney brothers?" Lisa sloshed hot coffee down her fingers as she eagerly set the mug down. She said, "You really don't have to tell me all the personal drama and stuff. I swear I'm not like some kind of fangirl. But, okay, I used to be. Honestly, a lot of recent Darian's videos have been pretty boring lately, though. Like, they don't even find ghosts half the time." Gage said, "That's because they're the real deal." Lisa leaned in. "Like, 100% legit?" she asked. Gage said, "100%. Honestly, there is no personal drama between me and them. They're so legit, I guess I just couldn't handle it. What do you mean? Well... Gage inspected Lisa a moment, stopping only when she began to recoil in discomfort. Sorry, it's just, I don't want to ruin Reese and Darian's reputation, you know? They're super legit now, but when I started out with them, it was all just for fun. We went to real supposedly haunted places, but everything else in those old videos was fake. Wait, which ones? How old? Lisa demanded. Gage laughed and shook his head. The fake ones are all gone. Reese and Darian decided to delete them and start over because of this one night we had at the Fitz house. Have you heard of it? Lisa scrunched her eyebrows. Duh. But I didn't think the Whitneys ever did a video there. Oh, they did. We did, said Gage. Thing is, it was back when we were faking it. And that house, it was so... We weren't prepared at all. And you never uploaded the video? Never even edited it, Gage replied. I've still got all the raw footage and stuff, but that was the same night Reese and Darian decided to trash the whole channel. They started fresh and I stayed with them, but, well, we had a pretty crazy experience that sort of ruined the whole thing for me. What happened? Lisa asked earnestly. Quickly realizing he had no desire to discuss his bodily possession by a spirit named Jude a couple of years prior, Gage diverted the conversation. Hey, do you actually want to see some of the footage from the unreleased Fitz House video? I bet I still have it on Google Drive. Oh my god, could I? Lisa asked, going full fangirl. Are you two ready to order? The waiter, again appearing from nowhere, asked. Are you? Gage asked. Lisa shook her head. Gage said, sorry, no. And the waiter walked away. Gage spent the next 3 minutes logging into Google Drive and searching through folders until he found the right files. He showed Lisa videos of him, Reese, and Darian Whitney exploring the Fitz house. Finally, he showed her their dramatic Ouija board session, during which Darian could be heard screaming, "Everything else, all fake. We're fakes. Fakes." He was yelling that because he was having his first real paranormal experience, Gage explained. He told us later that he picked something he would never normally say on video to convince us he was being serious. Pretty crazy, right? Super crazy, Lisa soberly concurred. The waiter returned a moment later. Lisa and Gage enjoyed a pleasant meal and conversation, then parted ways in the parking lot. Gage hoped to see her again. He waited a couple of days, then reached out to Lisa to arrange a second date. Lisa did not respond. But that same day, Gage received a call from his long-lost friend, Reese Whitney. Excited, Gage answered, "Hey man, what's up?" "Gage?" Reese asked, his tone too serious for Gage to ignore. "Everything okay?" Gage asked. Reese said, "I don't know, man. Not really. Did you leak the video?" "What video?" Gage asked, realizing what Reese might mean in the lingering silence which followed. Reese asked, "You're kidding, right? The least you can do is be honest with me right now. What did you do?" Gage admitted he had shown a date some footage from the Fitz house, and Reese sent him an article published that morning exposing the Whitney brothers as frauds who capitalized on people's beliefs and tragedies. Certain quotes from an unnamed prior collaborator provided damning evidence. The article also included a video zoomed in on a phone playing a video in which Darian's voice could be heard screaming about them being fakes. The author, one Lisa Duncan, neglected to include any of the context Gage had given her. Reese, sounding only slightly more angry than defeated, said, "This could really be the end. And man, you know we're not fakes. The stuff we've been doing, I really believe we're helping people now. Or at least we were before this." Gage tried to explain what he had really told Lisa, how he'd been tricked. He assumed the waiter had been in on the ruse and had secretly recorded the videos he showed Lisa on his phone. If Gage remembered correctly, the waiter had been clearing the table behind him when he held out his phone for Lisa to watch. "Look, man, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean for any of this," Gage said. Rhys told him he knew, but sounded no less upset about it. They ended the conversation sourly, and Gage felt a headache coming on. Immediately following his call with Rhys Whitney, Gage sent another message to Lisa. This time, he condemned her for potentially ruining the Whitney brothers' reputations. He told her she needed to either retract her article or publish a correction stating the full story he shared with her. Apparently, Lisa also did not enjoy being labeled a fraud because she finally responded. Lisa, you're accusing me of being a liar and fraud when you knowingly participated in making videos made to fool people? Gage, I told you we stopped doing that. After the video I showed you, we turned legit. I explained all of that to you. Lisa, I don't know how you expect anyone to believe you after you've admitted to making fake videos. Gage, this isn't about me. I quit after a horrible and very real experience I didn't even tell you about. The Whitneys are good guys, and they don't deserve what you did to them. Lisa, if they can somehow prove what they do is real, I'll consider writing a follow-up. Gage, aren't their videos and the people they've helped proof enough? Lisa, no. Gage, if they take you on a hunt, will you believe? Lisa, I'm not sure. At this point, an idea began festering in Gage's mind. He thought it unlikely the Whitneys would want to take Lisa on a ghost hunt. Besides, Gage felt it should not be up to them to resolve the situation. For himself and the Whitney brothers, everything had changed at the Fitz house. Perhaps that house could do the same for Lisa Duncan. Maybe she needed to have her own undeniable experience before she could comprehend the mistake she had made. Gage suggested this, and to his surprise, she accepted. Lisa, if you set it up, I'll go. If I experience anything there that I can't possibly explain away, I'll consider writing a retraction. This non-committal agreement gave Gage the relief he needed to fall asleep that night. As soon as he woke the next morning, he called the number listed on the Fitz House website for booking. He spoke with Clint Fitz, current owner and manager of the property. He set a date for himself and Lisa. He sent her the details, and she told him she would be there. Gage then sent a message to Rhys and Darian, explaining his plan and promising their troubles would be over soon.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
On a remote island in frigid Lake Superior, a fabricated creature birthed from the mind of a disturbed genius stalks the very people who created it. Ancestor, by number one New York Times bestselling author Scott Sigler, is a classic tale of science gone horribly wrong. Available wherever you get your podcasts.
Gage arrived at the Fitz house early on the date of his and Lisa's stay. He needed a chance to process what he was about to put himself through without Lisa's nagging questions and skeptical eye. He sat in his car, staring at the red brick house. From the outside, no one would ever guess the place might be haunted. It gave no indication that it housed the tragic spirit of a man who had been accidentally brought there to be embalmed alive. Lisa arrived. She brought a small camera with her and nothing more. She and Gage shared a cold reunion, then walked up the path through the small, trimmed yard. The door opened before they knocked. Clint Fitz, nephew of the house's namesake, welcomed them inside. "So, you said you've been here before? I'm sorry, but I can't say I remember you," Clint said as he gestured for Gage and Lisa to have a seat on the couch across from him. They sat on opposite ends. "Yeah, the Whitney brothers brought me here the night they investigated it. I came late, though, so I missed the rundown," Gage explained. "Ah, yes, the Whitney brothers. You know, I waited months for them to release the video from that night before I decided they were never going to. In fact, I think they deleted their whole channel." "They did," Gage said. Then he explained what happened that night and why the Whitneys never put out a video about it. "I guess that makes sense," Clint said. "This place is the real deal. It's pretty intense at times. I'm pretty sure it killed my sister." "What?" This was the first time Lisa said anything, and she sounded genuinely afraid. Clint said, "Her name was Bessie. She was here that night," he nodded to Gage, "when Reese and Darian came. They met her. I bet they remember her being too weak to stand on her own. That was right before the end. This place, I don't know. It just drained her." "Do you think it was the house or the spirit?" Gage asked, then added, "Oh, and sorry for your loss." "Thanks," Clint said, forcing a quick smile. "I don't blame the spirit, no. He's just another victim of this place. He's trapped. I don't even think this place is evil or anything like that. It's just, I don't really know how to explain it." "Heavy," Lisa said. Clint slowly nodded. "That's the simplest way to put it, yeah. If you spend too much time here, it just sucks the life out of you. That's what happened to Bessie, and I'm worried it's happening to me." "Why don't you sell it?" Gage asked. "Guilt, mostly," Clint answered. "I'd feel bad about passing it along to someone who doesn't understand what they're getting into. Plus, it meant so much to Bessie and Aunt Louise. She poured everything she had into this house and did everything she could to make it a home for those kids. Oh, I'm not sure if you know, but my Aunt Louise ran a respite home here. Before that, it was a funeral home. Normally, I tell the whole story when people come stay." "That's all right, we know the history," said Gage. Then he asked, "What do you know about Nathaniel?" Clint perked up. "You know, we've had quite a few guests tell us they think that's the spirit's name." Gage nodded. "The Ouija board told us." Clint said, "Well, I believe it. Ever since Bessie died, the spirit, Nathaniel, he's been pretty quiet, honestly. Now that it's just me here, he seems far less active. We've had a few other YouTubers come in here trying to make videos and getting absolutely nothing." "Great," Gage thought. "Lisa's gonna think the Whitneys still faked everything." "Any tips on how to make him show up?" Lisa asked, surprising Gage with her interest. He expected her to be a cold skeptic, but now he wondered if she might actually want to be proven wrong. "Just make sure you spend a lot of time in the basement," Clint said. "That's where he likes to hang out. You probably won't see him, not like we used to, but if you make it really clear that you want to hear from him, he just might touch you. That's how he communicates." "That's how he talked to Darian," Gage said to Lisa. Clint suddenly stood, as if deciding he didn't want to be there anymore. "You two need anything else before I get out of here? I think I need a nap." They told him they were okay and thanked him for letting them investigate. He, in turn, thanked them and wished them good luck. "Hey," he said on his way out the door. He turned to face them, looking a little sad. "I'm tired, in every sense. This place, well, you know, the extra income it brings is nice, but, well, if you can figure out how to end the haunting, I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind at all. Gage said, "We're not the Whitneys, but we'll see what we can do." Clint left, and Gage and Lisa were alone. "You doing okay?" Lisa asked Gage. Gage rose and stepped away from her. He did not like how intimate it felt to be seated beside her now that they were alone. He still found her undeniably attractive, but he couldn't trust her. "I'm fine," he lied. Lisa said, "Sorry, it's just that you seem really nervous." Gage replied, "It's just being back here. It feels weird. Reese and Darian processed what happened to us really fast. Like I said, they decided that very night to start over. I stayed in denial for a long time." "What exactly did happen?" Lisa asked, standing. "Walk me through it." "Well," Gage hesitated, "then we have to go to the basement." He showed Lisa the way. They descended the narrow steps between two cold stone walls, finally arriving at the threshold of the room known as the bunk room to the foster kids. The bunk room also owned the reputation of being the most haunted location in the house. "So this is where everything went down," Gage said, stepping into the infamous room and sliding his backpack down his arm. Cobwebs reached from the ceiling and shrouded every corner, just like they had when he filmed with the Whitneys. "I came late, so I'm not sure what went on before, but when I got here, we busted out a Ouija board and started playing. We all thought someone else was controlling the planchette. The spirit said its name was Nathaniel and that it wasn't dead." "How is a ghost not dead?" Lisa asked. She pulled the drawstring hanging from the single light bulb in the room, and nothing happened. They would have to rely on the faint light coming through the doorway, since the underground room had no windows. "Yeah, we wondered about that too," Gage replied. "When we figured out none of us were controlling the answers, we got scared. We thought it not being dead meant it was, you know, a demon. Then it touched Darian." "Did you see it?" Lisa asked, quietly. She involuntarily checked over her shoulder. "No, I honestly didn't see anything. We had LED lights flooding the room. Reese says he saw a shadow, but I thought Darian was just acting the whole time. The spirit, Nathaniel, showed Darian a vision. What he meant by not being dead was that his family brought him here before he was actually dead. You know, when it was a mortuary. He had some kind of condition that put him in a coma. He couldn't wake up, so the mortician, thinking he was dead, you know, embalmed him alive." "That's insane," Lisa interrupted. "What about his pulse? Wouldn't a mortician have known blood pools in a dead body?" "Darian said Nathaniel was really sick beforehand and everyone expected him to die. When he went catatonic, they rushed him straight to, well, here." "Insane," Lisa repeated. She asked, "What's your plan this time since we don't have a Ouija board?" Gage thought for a moment, then pulled out his phone. He sat on the dusty floor and gestured for Lisa to do the same. Gage placed his phone on the floor between them, screen up. "I just want to make sure you understand. Experiencing something paranormal firsthand like this, it's going to mess with your head. Don't expect to get much sleep for a while." Lisa all but rolled her eyes. Gage leaned forward and tapped his phone screen. The room's near-perfect darkness made the screen's light seem doubly intense. Their shadows expanded outward, coming to life on the walls. Gage noticed, for the first time, there actually was a window in the room, boarded up behind one of the bunk beds. "We'll use this," Gage said, gesturing to the phone just as the screen blacked out again. The brief exposure to light now made them utterly blind. "We'll use it kind of like a Ouija board. I'll ask yes or no questions. Nathaniel can answer yes by touching the screen and no by leaving it alone." "Will that really work?" Lisa asked. Gage tipped his head back and loudly asked, "Nathaniel, can you touch this screen to answer yes?" He demonstrated how the screen lit up with just a gentle touch. The screen went dark again, and Gage waited. Lisa watched him doubtfully. If Nathaniel could not use the phone, Gage wasn't sure what else to try. Reese and Darian were the ghost hunters. He had always been the tag-along, the third wheel, the comic relief. Even before he swore off paranormal investigation, he would not have known where to start on his own. Two things occurred to Gage almost at once. First, he recalled Darian often offering the energy from their batteries and lights, or even his own energy, to the spirits, in case they needed an extra boost in order to communicate. This remembrance triggered the more recent memory of Clint explaining his sister Bessie's premature death. He had said, "It just drained her," which gave Gage an idea he was hesitant to act upon. "Maybe he's just saying no," Lisa sarcastically suggested. Gage ignored her, instead addressing the spirit directly. "Nathaniel, if you need energy to touch the screen, you can take it from me. Just don't take too much, okay?" Lisa's bored scowl twisted, displaying concern. Even to a skeptic like herself, inviting a spirit to harvest energy from you felt dangerous. The phone remained dark. Gage asked Nathaniel if he remembered him or the Whitneys. He asked if Nathaniel was trapped. Finally, he asked if Nathaniel was even there at all. Sensing his desperation, but inspired by his conviction, Lisa asked Gage if he wanted to try a different method. "I don't have any other ideas. I didn't bring any gear," he said. "Well," Lisa said, inserting a wide pause, "didn't it communicate by touching one of you last time?" Gage said, "Yeah, Darian, but he's gifted. Out of all of us, he's always had the..." Lisa interjected, "I want to ask it to touch me." Gage stared at her, trying to decide if she was playing with him. But whether she really believed or not, if she wanted to try... "Okay," Gage said. "The thing is, he usually sneaks up on people, so the way we're sitting across from each other won't work. I wonder if that's why he wasn't touching my phone, actually." Lisa scooted herself across the floor until the edge of her thigh touched Gage's. He hated himself for how much this excited him. He said, "Okay, now let's close our eyes and you say something like, 'Nathaniel, you can touch me.'" "I don't remember Darian saying anything like that in the video," Lisa pointed out. "We didn't know it was real yet, and Darian didn't volunteer to get touched," Gage replied, then shut his eyes and bowed his head as if in prayer. And in many ways, their attempted communion with the silent spirit was just like prayer. One neither of them truly wanted answered. After long minutes of silence, Gage felt Lisa put her hand on his shoulder. Even through his shirt, he could feel the chill of her fingers. Her grip, which he perceived as fearful, felt a little too tight, but Gage resisted the temptation to say anything. He did not want to interrupt whatever might happen next. "Nathaniel Locke," a weaselly voice said behind him. Gage tried to open his eyes, but found he could not. The cold hand on his shoulder pressed into him. It did not, he realized, belong to Lisa after all. He felt its chill creep up his neck and into his chest. Along with that sensation came the feeling he was tipping backwards. He shouted Lisa's name, but Lisa was not next to him anymore. Or rather, he was not next to her. As the chill infected his skull, the rotational motion stopped. Gage felt as if he were lying flat on his back, hands down at his sides, legs together. He could hear someone moving around, clinking tools down on a countertop, mumbling to himself. "Nathaniel Locke," the Weasley voice repeated. "Let's see here." A thumb pressed against Gage's eye and lifted his eyelid. He stared up at a wiry, bald man with a white beard and Coke bottle glasses. The mortician. He could feel the mortician's brittle hand trembling with arthritis as it let his eye shut again. Gage could not move, could not speak. He was utterly helpless against the inevitable experience he knew the mortician would subject him, or really Nathaniel, to. As he worked, touching and moving Gage on the table, the mortician spoke.
"Well, Nathaniel, for someone who's been dying for so long, to finally go must have been a relief. You'll be sorely missed, but I hope you take no offense in me saying we're all happy you've moved on. No one should have to suffer as much as you have."
Gage felt something even colder than the icy fingers which had cast him into his dream press against the side of his neck. He felt only pressure at first, then a searing cut. His skin separated, and warm blood trickled around his ear into his hair.
"They certainly wasted no time bringing you here," the mortician mumbled.
Gage felt him make a second cut, then a sickening nudge under his skin. Gage experienced the entire embalming process as if it were recorded on tape and fast-forwarded, or like it was downloaded into him. He felt everything Nathaniel felt, only in a fraction of the time. Still, despite this small mercy, Gage understood the horrific trauma which had trapped Nathaniel's spirit there.
"Go away!"
Someone shook him awake. "Lisa." Gage opened his eyes and found himself staring up at her petrified face. He heard a fuzzy sort of rumbling. Lisa put something in his hand. Wary of the intense nausea in his gut, Gage sat up. The rumbling thing was his phone, and Lisa had given it to him because Darian Whitney's name was scrolling across the screen. Gage hastily answered. Darian asked, "Are you at the Fitz house already?" It took Gage a moment to remember how Darian would know that.
"Yeah," he said,
"and I'm with Lisa Duncan." Darian said, "I called because I got a feeling. I just got this strong sense that you were in trouble and..."
"Darian?"
Gage cut in.
"I don't know what to do. I just had the vision. I can't abandon Nathaniel here again, but I'm in over my head here."
Darian asked, "Do Clint and Bessie know you're trying to resolve the haunting? I mean, I agree that you should, but..."
"Bessie's dead," Gage said.
He repeated what Clint had said about her death. Darian spent some time thinking, asking a few questions here and there, and finally gave Gage instructions for an antiquated ritual he and Lisa could try.
"If it doesn't work, then I'm not sure what more you can do without pro help," Darian said at the end. "Just be careful, and tell Lisa we'll be expecting a big apology and a new article tomorrow."
Lisa, hearing this perfectly, looked away, ashamed.
"Do you have anything to write with?" Gage asked Lisa.
"Sure, I've always got a notepad with me." She produced a red notepad and pen, handing them to Gage. Although he had not seen the name written anywhere, Gage somehow knew Locke was spelled L-O-C-H-E. He wrote, "Nathaniel Locke," on one of the pages of Lisa's notepad and tore it out. From his backpack, he removed a lighter and the plastic sandwich bag he had used to protect his toothbrush. After returning Lisa's notepad and pen and tossing his backpack onto one of the bunk beds, Gage sat in the middle of the floor across from Lisa again. She watched him intently. Loudly, Gage called, "Nathaniel Locke, please join us in this room." The cobwebs swayed in unison. Gage felt the air move. Not quite a breeze, but motion nonetheless. Lisa's mouth dropped open and her eyes widened. They focused on something behind Gage. He resisted the instinct to look.
"He's..."
Lisa whimpered.
"Don't tell him to go away again," Gage said.
He held the piece of paper with Nathaniel's name on it up.
"Nathaniel Locke, I'm inviting you to follow us. We'll bring you to where they buried you, and hopefully you can find closure and finally rest."
Gage held his lighter beneath the paper, flicked it, and let the flame jump onto the page. He exchanged the lighter for the plastic bag, holding it beneath the burning paper to catch the black ash which fell away from it. Lisa held her breath the whole time. Once the entire page had burned, Gage sealed the bag and told Lisa to follow him. They left the Fitz house in Gage's car. Lisa navigated them to the only cemetery in town. Driving past sleeping houses and businesses, modern dwellings with modern cars parked outside, Gage began to doubt the ritual's authenticity. Out there, the sort of magic they were trying to do didn't seem like it should exist. But as he parked along the curb at the cemetery, the supernatural felt real again. He gave Lisa a flashlight from his glove box, and together, they went in search of Nathaniel Locke's grave. Some force seemed to guide them through the blue darkness. The hundreds of headstones could have taken an hour to search through in daylight and multiple hours at night, but Gage and Lisa cut through the middle without a word to each other about it. They both felt the same ghostly tug in that direction. "I think he's still with us," Lisa said. "Careful," Gage whispered. "You sound like you might actually believe in this stuff now." Lisa made the nervous equivalent of a laugh. "Yeah, you win, okay? Tell Reese and Darian to expect a correction. Although, you guys aren't the only ones I feel like I need to apologize to." Gage knew who she meant. The spirit, currently walking with them through the cemetery, showing them where to go. "Here, here," Lisa nearly shouted. She shone the flashlight on a flat stone nearly overgrown with grass. She and Gage tore away the grass until the marker was completely visible. It read, "Nathaniel J. Locke, Rest in Peace and Love, 1931 to 1978. "Here we are," Gage spoke into the cool air. He unsealed the bag of ashes. It smelled of more than burnt paper. The added scent was not unpleasant, though. It smelled like flowers, Gage thought. He could not name the species, but he knew they were white. The ashes smelled like white flowers, like spring, like beginning. "Do you need to say anything?" Lisa asked. "No," Gage said. And without further ado, he turned up the bag and unleashed a cloud of ash. It rained down upon the grave of Nathaniel J. Locke. Gage stared vacantly as the ashes came to rest and the sweet aroma faded. He said, "I wanted to say something. I wasn't sure what, but I wanted to say something to apologize for leaving him there, I guess." "So why didn't you?" Lisa asked, sounding honestly curious. She had the tears of someone whose core beliefs have been overturned for the better in her eyes. "I hoped maybe he might still be able to hear me after," Gage answered. "And I didn't think he'd want to wait any longer." Lisa Duncan wrote her correction and apology for her smear against the Whitney brothers. The Whitney brothers released a video with their own retroactive apology for creating false videos in the past. They assured viewers that they happily would have gone back to the location from the leaked video, which they confirmed as the Fitz house, but they had heard the haunting there recently stopped. Somehow, someone, they left Gage's name out at his request, put Nathaniel Locke's spirit to rest. Gage Kepler managed to return to obscurity, where he remains today. Whether he and Lisa ever spoke again is unknown. And yes, the Fitz house went still that day. Clint Fitz, still growing healthier by the day, decided to sell it and be done with his family's brief legacy. He forewent the highest bidder in favor of a nonprofit organization treating youth in recovery. The infamous house, a place children once entered into brave and left afraid, would now be a place for scared children to leave braver and stronger. A new rumor has taken hold there, in that house which now bears a new unpublished name. It's said Nathaniel Locke still watches over the children, only now, from above. And all around the yard, surrounding, guarding the house and its residents, is an army of little white flowers. made it out. Congratulations. If you enjoyed the story, please rate and review this podcast wherever you like to listen. Reviews are the best way to support the podcast and help it grow. The next best way is to buy merch from thewarningwoods.myshopify.com. The link is also in the description below. If you want more creepy content, follow me on Instagram at The Warning Woods. If you feel ready, meet me here next week for another journey into The Warning Woods. Thank you for listening.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.